You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.
Thank you for joining us, and welcome to another edition of Answers Network. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and each week, this show will address many ways of creating greater health, joy, and love for you and your family. And we will introduce you to top professionals and talented authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, I'd really appreciate it if you could all do me a big favor. Please forward this show to your social media group and to someone you know that can benefit from today's subject. This is one powerful way we can make a positive difference together. Now, I want you all to know that I'm very grateful that you take your time to listen or watch this show, and especially those that send in questions, comments, reviews, and suggestions, because please remember, this show exists for you. Now, if you haven't gotten your free copy of the Attitude of Gratitude Journal yet, please go to our website at answers.network, download a copy, give it 21 days, and comment on whatever platform you listen to us on, what focusing on gratitude has meant for you and your loved ones. We want to do everything we can to be able to bring very positive information to everyone. And the more that you can help get this information out to other people, the more we can make that positive difference. So keep doing it. Now, our topic today, which is also the title of our guest's new book, is Moneyfulness. Think about that for a minute. And the subcategory is learning to live with money. Now, moneyfulness is a unique combination of financially grounded insights intended to address the heart of money stress and how people think about money. Now, studies show that 72% of all Americans experience stress about their finances, and that's probably gotten even worse with COVID and everything else. So here's the thing. That stress that people have over money is a product of their own convictions and behavior. Our guest presents the idea that people's mindset about money and the practical how-to belong together and taught to all. Now, Michael Keat was a high school dropout and at the age of 21 was labeled as underprivileged with no relevant education or work experience. He now has his bachelor's degree in accounting and finance, and within 9 years, Michael went from underprivileged to finance director at the age of 30 before becoming an entrepreneur and developing online accounting software to help small business owners. He is also a certified mindfulness coach and has been published and interviewed by the Dutch Financial Times along with other newspapers. Michael, welcome to Answers Network.
Thank you. Thank you, Alan, and good morning.
Yes, and good evening to you and for everybody out there. Michael resides in the Netherlands, so he is reaching us, I guess, at about 8 p.m. their time.
Yes, it is.
All right.
You're right.
All right. Well, now you heard the introduction, what I talked about, but what I didn't mention was some of your own experiences or difficulties. So tell us about the school of hard knocks you experienced that led to the creation of your grounded system for financial success.
Yeah. Well, the first thing you already mentioned that I've been labeled as an underprivileged youngster and became a finance director at the age of 30. Later on, I realized that it was just a shift in mindset. There was someone who believed in me. He gave me the opportunity to start learning again, start going to school again. And so I was really able to shift my mind, and your mindset is the most powerful thing you have to change your own future. But later on, when I was a finance director, I had quite a nice income just from working. And then I had a lot of stress about money, because if I lose my job, I will lose my house, I will lose whatever your mind can make up for horrible stories. When I had my own accounting and tax software, I was one of the main suppliers, the one who did the development and maintenance, found some small letters in the contract, and they send me huge bills. So I got them into debt. But then I was wondering, how is that possible? Because now I'm living in debt and I have hardly any stress about my financial position. And then 15 years before, when I was working as a finance director, I was really stressed out about my financial situation, because whatever story might happen, which didn't happen, but might happen. So then I started wondering, and then I just came to the conclusion when I started my own business, I also started doing some personal development trainings. One of them was mindfulness. So then I just started combining all these things together, just knowing that your mindset is one of the most powerful things, that you can control your level of stress, and especially your stress level when it comes to your finances. And then I started realizing, how is it possible? And then I studied mindfulness. I became a certified mindfulness coach. And then I made it all together. At that time, it all came together for me. It all made sense. So that's based on the 7 pillars of mindfulness, is the mindset part of mindfulness. And but you also have to do your practical money management, because you have to manage your money, whether it's a dollar or $100,000 or a million. Mm-hmm. So that's basically how I came to mindfulness.
That's right. I love the fact that you brought up one of the biggest differences was somebody believed in you. Yeah. And we have a lot of teachers that that listen to or watch this show that comment. Can you touch a little bit more about how important that was? Because I know that in your book and stuff, but you relate that, you know, had that not happened, I mean, you could have been in a completely different direction.
Completely. Yeah. Well, I started working at the age of 17, 18 or something. And then you go work in a factory and you start doing vegetables and meat and putting things together and things like that. I've also been in the army for about 1.5 years. It was obligated also in the Netherlands. So I've been doing all these kinds of things, but not really doing something which I really liked. And it's also not a great fundament just to build a career upon if you work in several factories, doing the standard jobs. And then I got the opportunity. I'm really grateful that I got the opportunity to start learning again. And that was one opportunity and I grabbed it. And that's my savior is. Might be a big word, but it really pushed me to change your mind and to make something out of life and to shape your own future. So it's very important.
You know, one of the things that we've talked about on this show before, which has to do with education, and I believe the author of Rich Dad, Poor Dad talks about this as well. Is our school system seems to want to teach people how to remember things or teach kids how to get a job, but not how to make money or how to keep your money or how to make your money, make money, more money for you. That doesn't seem to be part of, at least here in America, the curriculum up through high school anyway, until you get to college.
No,
is it the same in Netherlands?
Yeah, it's the same in Europe. They teach you all kinds of things, how the macroeconomics, the world economics, the inflation and stuff like that. They teach you that at school. But how to manage your own money, your own income and expenses, it's hardly taught anywhere. Sometimes, yes, but it's not that often and not in depth, at least. And when it is taught is how to make a budget. And there's also a lot of parents teach their children. And the things they teach their children is mostly how to save money and how to make a budget. If you're lucky, how to invest. But that's basically what they teach children. The way you can think about money, the way you act when you're dealing with money, the emotions when you're dealing with money, you have to find it out for yourself. And the funny thing is, everybody has an opinion about money. And never ever it's even a thought at schools or at home or wherever.
Well, we have a question that came in, and I think it touches on this a little bit in regards to this unusual way in which people are led to believe about money. And this question, and again, I want to thank the Alexandria for sending this question in. This one says, my mother said to me repeatedly that the love and obsession with money was the cause of evil in the world. And I think that as a result of her words, I have a deep-seated fear of being financially successful. When I read the title and description of your guest's book, I thought perhaps it might bring some insight to overcoming this issue in my life. Can you share your thoughts on this? And this is from Alexandria in Arizona, in the U.S.
Thank you for the question, Alexandria. It's really a very good question, because I'm going to use a little different phrase, because that's the most worldwide, most translated quote about money all over the world, is money is the root of all evil. It's a little bit different, but it's bottom line, it does the same thing with your belief system and the way you think about money. But what your parents tell you, and let's say till the age of 8 or 9 years old, you don't have the ability to think critically. Is it true or is it not true? So everything you hear and see and so on is true. So these are the thoughts and emotions that are planted really deep into your brain. The neural pathways have been worked a million times. So you think it on autopilot. That's really the hardest part, to find out which convictions you really, really, really have deep inside of you. But it's trainable. You can train to think differently. Mm-hmm. But that's just repeating. It's more or less something like self-hypnosis. You have to repeat it into your mind that you love money. You love money. You're entitled to money. You attract money. You live in abundance and things like that. But also make a plan. How much do you want to make? And how much do you want to earn? And how much do you want to have? Mm-hmm. Because if you set a goal to that one, your brain automatically starts making plans how to realize it. So then it makes it for you a lot easier to reach your financial goals in terms of income or in an amount. So, and then you work backwards to the day. What do you have to do today to reach your goal in 3, 4, 5 years, whatever your plan is, for how long it takes. So these are, I think, really simple things, but it's not easy to change the neural pathway that's been there for 10, 20, 30, I don't know how many years, which have been, that road have been worked 1,000 times.
Yeah, and I think you bring up a great point, you can make these changes. And I think once you make these changes, when you're thinking about what's evil, well, what's evil is what people choose to do with it. And I think that's the difference, you know. So to blame them, say that the money is, no. If you use this to enrich your family, if you use this, if you make donations to the local, your local church or to nonprofits that help people that are that are less fortunate and stuff, you know, that money is not evil. That money is doing good, and if we can look at things that way. But I think that we've gotten to this point that it's much easier. You know, if you look at the way that the media will approach it or the way that politicians approach it, it's as if you're supposed to be ashamed if you've worked hard to do this.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that comes from the politicians, because they want to be able to increase the taxes and take more. And so it's easier to take it if they make you feel ashamed of it.
Yeah. That's for sure. Let me add one additional thing. 10% of all income from Moneyfulness is donated to charity that fights poverty. So that's exactly in line with what you were just telling the audience.
Mm-hmm.
So, but if you are really convinced that money is the root of all evil, or Alexandria's way of thinking about money, and you win the lottery, And let me tell you something, and I mean really big prize in the lottery. Yeah, let's say over a million. Mm-hmm. About 80% has to go to their daytime job after 3 to 5 years. A part of the ones that win the lottery even remain with debt after they won the lottery. So somehow, if you believe the root of all evil and you win the lottery or bigger income or whatever, evil is coming into your house. And what do you want to do when evil comes into your house? You want to get rid of it.
Mm-hmm.
So you start spending money, strange investments, the luxury life, then no investments at all. And an investment is something that brings you money. It's not costing you money or lesser value, becomes less value. Like, for example, if you buy a Ferrari, after the first mile you drove, the 10%, you can write off 10% of the purchase value. So that's not an investment.
Mm-hmm.
Unless it's a very old Ferrari, but most of them, when you drive out of the garage, then it's 10% less value.
Yep.
So that's not an investment. Investment is something that brings you money.
Yeah, and I love the fact that a percentage, you know, goes to charity. And I also love the fact that you want to spread the word on how everybody can improve their quality of life by improving their relationship with money. And one of the ways that you're doing this is through teaching other coaches. So tell us about your quest to find those, you know, who want to be coaches, and then you teach them your method so that it can spread faster.
Yep, that's exactly what I'm doing right now. I'm looking for coaches who want to spread the word and want to help other people to reduce their stress about their financial situation. Because, like you already said, 72% of all Americans experience stress about their financial situation. So if you can reduce it, that percentage, then there's a lot less stress in the world. And that's better for the world. This is better for everybody. And you can help other people tremendously. Because the practical budgeting part, there are more business coaches, life coaches who do that part. But there are not that many coaches that really want to help others with their financial mindset, the belief systems and emotions when they're dealing with money. So, yes, I want to set it up, but it's there's something like Corona and not able to come to the U.S. To set it up properly, but it is established, the enterprise.
If somebody wants to know more about it, and maybe if they end up having to wait till after things are opened up more or whatever, what is the best way for them to get in touch with you? And tell us a little bit more about what it entails. I mean, it sounds like it needs to be some of it's in person, but you know, if you can do it over StreamYard or Zoom or something like that.
Yeah. Personally, I love to do it in person, but it's really just, it consists of two parts. One is you start analyzing. Let's say you come to me and I want to help you with your financial situation. And there's a 6-month program and a 12-month program. Most of the time, because in some strange things also happening. I want to mention that one as well, because I tried to do groups, but a lot of people just don't like talking about money in front of other people. Mm. They are ashamed. They are afraid. They are every possible emotion comes up, but they just are afraid to talk about money. So that's why the one-on-one or one-on-family. Yeah, because you can, there's between couples, there's the money is the one thing that causes most stress. So, but let me get back to the program. You analyze their financial behavior because your bank account is the perfect mirror of your behavior. It shows everything about your behavior, your financial behavior, what you're buying and what you're spending your money on, whatnot.
Mm-hmm.
That's one thing. And the other thing is there are a lot of exercises when you start finding the thoughts that you think on autopilot, because these are the hardest things to find. So you start adjusting it. And I didn't mention it before, but I'm also recently became a hypnotherapist to help people with their unconscious mind. But then you start adjusting their belief system. And for example, your net worth and your self-worth, there's a direct correlation between these two. So you start improving, for example, the self-worth, then the net worth is easier to follow.
Nice.
So, but like the way your parents were thinking about money, like the question from Alexandria, money is the root of all evil, for example. But also the finding out the first memories about money. Let me give you another example.
Okay.
It happens quite a lot, eh? Like an uncle or an aunt or one of the grandparents just giving you $3. Hey, shh, don't tell your mom and dad, eh? But you can go buy an ice cream. Here's the $3. Just shh, don't tell your mom and dad. Don't tell them. But if you tell that to a 7-year-old, yeah, you get the $3 in your hand, but you have to lie to your parents.
Right.
And there's a whole lot of secrecy involved when you're dealing with money. And if something like that happens when you are 6, 7, 8 years old, the story in your mind can make up money is a secretive thing. You're not allowed to talk about money. It's really a secret. And when you're in your relationship, and that's something that kept on spinning in your mind, how likely are you going to talk with your partner about money? Not that likely. And it sounds so innocent. It sounds, oh, it's me giving to the child $3 to buy an ice cream.
Mm-hmm.
It's so innocent. But I've heard it so many times that was something like that was the first experience with money the children had. So that's really, really a funny thing. And just finding things like that or another one, pocket money. Also, everybody had pocket money, let's say weekly or biweekly. You got a couple of bucks, but the question is, did you have to go to your parents and beg for the $5?
Mm-hmm.
That's a form of control. Did you have to do something in the household? Did you have to mow the lawn or do the dishes or did you have to work for it?
Yeah.
And there's also something different to the pocket money. You had to work for it. You have to work for your money. And that is also a conviction which is heard quite a lot of times. Money isn't for free. You have to work for your money. You have to work hard for your money.
Right.
That's also something that may come from the way you're dealing with pocket money.
So, and I know that we also have a lot of parents that listen. So what would be maybe your top 3 tips that you would give parents with smaller children in the way to start them out in the right direction?
Well, the first and most important thing is set the good example. Set a good example, because if you tell your children you have to save money, you have to spend it wisely, and you are living in debt and spending money on rubbish, just throwing it away, what do you think your children will learn from you? What you say every now and then, spend wisely and save your money, or what you're showing them on a daily basis? So that's very, very important. The children learn from that and what they see on a daily basis. And the second thing is really be careful about what you tell to your children, like just the money is root of all evil or whatever phrase you have when you're talking about money.
Mm-hmm.
And just be open. If you're having a hard time, just tell your children, be open. They can handle a whole lot of different things. So they're not afraid of anything. Just explain it to them what's happening. Especially now when COVID hits, there are a lot of people losing their jobs or entrepreneurs with less income. Just tell them what's happening. They understand. They see what's happening. They see the stress on your face, the way your body reacts. They see it. Just talk to them. Be open.
Absolutely. I could not agree more. Because so many things, I think it comes down to communication. Yep. You know, if you are communicating with them, and it can be about money or about relationships or just about anything, start with good communication. I love it. We are talking with Michael Keat. His book is Mindfulness, Learning to Live with Money. We're going to take a break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Answers Network.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, West Shield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers Network. We are talking to Michael Keat, and we're talking about moneyfulness, which is tied very closely to mindfulness. So, Michael, you talk a little bit about, you know, entrepreneurs in the book, but share a little bit about how the value entrepreneurs place on people, possessions, and work ethics, how it directly relates to their cash flow.
Well, there are two things. As an entrepreneur, you have two ways when you're to deal with money: your personal financial situation and business-wise. So as an entrepreneur, you have to be careful with what you're doing with money, how you're dealing with money, and the emotions when you're dealing with money twice. Mm-hmm. But far more important, how many entrepreneurs are not able or not allow themselves or are afraid to ask a higher rate for their goods or services, mm-hmm. whatever it is. It doesn't matter whether you're a coach, consultant by the hour or by the day. How do you value yourself? Do you think what's your worth when you're asking your client? Do you ask $50 an hour, 100, 200, or just what is the value that you bring to the table? Mm-hmm. So what is it that you're bringing? Is it worth it? Do you think it's worth it? Because it's all in your mind. Because there are a lot of coaches that say, just pay me $10,000 a year and I'll help you. Yeah, and they might help you, and may even, you don't want to recalculate it to the hour. Just say, yeah, I'm worth it. But there are also coaches, am I allowed to ask $50 an hour or $40 an hour or whatever? Then you're back to the hourly business. And then, yeah, there's only 24 hours in a day. So you cannot optimize your own business when you're asking by the hour, some rate by the hour. So as an entrepreneur, you want to get out of the race in calculating everything by the hour. Just by bringing what value do you bring to the table? That's really some different way of thinking, and also start thinking of ways how to make money when there's nothing. It has nothing to do whether you work 1 hour or 10 hours a day. It brings you the money. Mm-hmm. And also find out multiple streams of income. And that's far more easy as an entrepreneur. Sorry. Because then you are able to diversify your goods or services. As you're when you're an employee, then yeah, you only have your job or two jobs, whatever.
Right.
If your job comes to an end, you have a serious problem. Mm-hmm. If you have several smaller jobs, or you have invested some money or whatever, then you have also multiple streams of income. Maybe smaller, the size doesn't always matter that much. But if one just drops out, whatever reason, you also you will always have more.
Correct.
So, but it's easier for entrepreneurs to have different streams of income, because you can easily add the products or services to what you're already delivering for your clients.
So let's talk about that part about the hourly versus the flat fee. So when you're training your coaches, how are you training them to be able to explain to their client or potential client, you know, what they're going to do and why this is going to be such an incredibly beneficial situation for them when asking for that larger number that some of us are very fearful of doing?
I fully understand. but that's, what do you bring to the table? I'm really convinced about the fact that I can make money for them. Mm-hmm. I make them money. I don't cost money. I make money. And that's, like I said, in the practical way, just how to set a budget, because a lot of people, how many people do really set a personal budget? Not that many people. But a personal budget is all about making choices. Do you want a Ferrari or a Maserati, or do you think a Honda will do? Mm-hmm. And for whom are you buying the Maserati or the Honda? For yourself or for someone else? Do you want to go out for dinner every night, or do you cook at home? Do you want to live in a big house with a huge mortgage, or do you want to live in a smaller home without a mortgage, for example? Just saying some things. It's right. All about making personal choice. And by analyzing their bank account, you easily see what the automatic subscription fees are, because there are a lot of things you pay for, but you don't even use anymore. And that's only $15 a month or $20 a month. It's okay. Let's just leave it. But if you add 5 subscriptions for $20 a month, you easily save $100 a month. Mm-hmm. While making the budget choices, it's even a bigger saving. And if you adjust their mindset, and if you, let's just say that the you change from the hourly fee into a flat fee, and you increase your income with 20-30%, who am I? I change their lives. Mm-hmm. And I want to end stress about their financial situation by reducing costs or increasing income, and them allowing themselves to have a higher income.
But what it sounds like is that, you know, if you're training these coaches, the coaches are going out and they're being more than just a money manager or someone. They're really being more of like a therapist that's helping them to not only get control of their budget, but to have a different mindset in why they're controlling their budget, or why they're choosing to spend or choosing not to.
Managing money is a technique. A technique is something you can learn. The mindset behavioral part of mindfulness is far it's not that easy to control. You have to change your mindset and your belief system and your the way you value yourself. And for some people, it takes only a couple of sessions, and some people just need 5 or 10 sessions to allow themselves to have money, to get rid of the conviction, money is root of all evil, or my parent or father always told me money was this or that, or I am a big spender. How do I adjust my behavior when I'm this money type, for example? So you start looking for different things, like the way they were brought up, they were convinced. What emotions do you have in different situations? What money type you are? And I also teach them to very easy ways how to reduce stress. That's more an NLP, hypnotherapy kind of thing you can do for yourself. Mm-hmm. So that's training them to control your financial mindset. And that's not that easy. That's not always that easy for a lot of people. Mm-hmm. But managing the money, that's really a technique. That's adding the numbers and that's it.
Well, one of the things that we get a lot of really positive feedback is the success stories. You yourself are a success story, and you've shared that. Share with us another success story of maybe somebody that you've worked with, because I find that so many people will, when they respond back to us, they'll say, "I really felt like they were speaking to me," or that was where I was at one time, or something like that. So I think that if you can share something that's a little different than your own experience, I think that'll be very valuable to our listeners.
If it's okay with you, I'll share two stories.
Absolutely.
One is completely different. You won't see it coming, but I'll start with the one which was actually an accountant, which I helped. Mm-hmm. He had an income of about 173,000 annually. So it was quite a successful accounting, helping the big corporates with their financial structures and everything. But then due to private circumstances, personal circumstances, his income dropped to 123,000. So let's say he roughly lost one third of his income. But he had hardly saved any money. So after about 2 years, all his savings were gone and he was really living in debt. He didn't have a clue what happened to him. And a lot of people say, $173,000 a year or $123,000 a year. It's quite a nice income. But he spent it all. Mm-hmm. So this one, really, we had to set his budget. It's really, this is the practical story. We just had to set the budget and make and convince him that's the right thing to do, to stick to the budget. Because he was always getting over his budget, spending more than we budgeted the first 2 or 3 months. Mm-hmm. But then we found out that he was a spender. And a spender just wants to buy things, just keep on buying things just to buy it. Not you need it, but you want to buy it.
Right.
I gave him a method how to control that mechanism, because if you really want, you know that the toddler goes like, I want it. Yeah. And you buy it.
Yep.
But that usually lasts 60 to 90 seconds, and then the I want it phase is over again, and you don't need it anymore. Right. And the emotion is, you don't have the emotion anymore. The thrill is gone, and then you just move on. You have to reward yourself, just like it's quite simple. You can have a glass jar, and every time you resisted that I want it emotion, just put one button in a glass jar. So you can see how fast your behavior, your good behavior, is growing. But that's how it worked.
Well, I'm saying, and maybe instead of a button, they should put money in there. And so now you're also saving money too.
That's one thing.
I said, yeah, maybe instead of a button, they have to put money in there.
When you put money in it, and let's say the jar is filled with coins, yeah. then they say, now I'm going to reward myself. Let's
and
just
go spend it. Yeah.
Those coins and spend it again. That's why I said something simple like buttons or whatever you want.
Gotcha.
So that's one practical one with the mindset, mm-hmm. just telling him, you are a spender. This is your behavior. I can see it in your bank account. I can see it in your behavior. You can control it this way. And it helps for him. The other one is a former boss of mine. And that's something a lot of people won't see coming, I guess. Because he was listed in the Dutch Forbes 500. So he had and together with his brother, he had a net worth about almost 800 million euros.
Wow.
So half of his was his money, half of it was the money from his brother, the other half of the company. He had children, and he was turning about 66 years old. And he wanted to pass on all the money, or most of the money, 90% of the money, to his children. So at that time, I was the finance director of the company. So with the tax guys, we started discussing how we can remove 90% of your assets to your children without paying any taxes, because who wants to pay taxes?
Right.
I can understand that. So we found a really good way to transfer 360 million to his children without hardly paying any taxes. Was a phenomenal way. So it left him 40 million, 10%, because 90% moved on to his children. And then he called me. He said, Michael, can you come to my office? I said, okay, let's see what's happening. So I went in the office, and he really, really was struggling. I don't have any money anymore. Can I even go to McDonald's for a hamburger? I'm poor. It took me 3 sessions with my former boss to let him realize that 40 million will last him a lifetime, because he wasn't living that strange luxury life. Mm-hmm. He was quite living quite a normal life. But so it was really in his mind that he lost 90% of his possessions. And most people say 40 million, oh, you're crazy. Just go live it, because you can buy a Ferrari, a Porsche, a house on Ibiza, whatever. But his mind turned around, and he was convinced that he was poor.
Wow.
So I convinced him that he had plenty of money and that it would last the rest of his life. But just think about, if you have, let's say, your net worth is 20,000, mm-hmm. and you take away 90%. So your bank account decreases from 20,000 to 2,000. What do you think? How would you experience the 2,000, the 10%, which is percentage-wise equal to what my former boss experienced? So I helped him on that way, and this convincing him that he had enough money, and showing that to him, and things like that.
Yeah, it sounds like a lot of what you're doing with your clients, that you're coaching, is you're showing them the difference between want and need. I mean, they want a lot of things, but do you really need it? And you're using time to allow them to get past whatever that trigger is that makes them want to rush out and get it.
Yeah, That's one of the techniques I teach them when they qualify as, for example, a spender. And that's about 40% of all people that are really spenders. And just they have that emotion that lasts for 60 to 90 seconds. So the second largest group is the savers. And that's completely the opposite. That's 35% of all people. And savers just want to save money. And why do they want to keep on saving more money, more and more money? And why do they want to save it? Because it gives them a feeling of security.
Mm-hmm.
The bigger their buffer is, the more secure they feel. But they just want to save money for the sake of saving money. They don't enjoy spending money. It's really hard for them to save money, to spend money. Sorry, the other way around. So if you are a saver, just take a percentage or a fixed amount for every month and allow yourself to spend it stress-free. Right. Allow it to yourself, because if you are a saver, keep on saving, but don't do all the saving, but spend a little bit on funny things. It makes life a lot easier to live. The quality of life will increase tremendously.
Right. And it sounds like what you're teaching is balance.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah.
We're emotionally just... and financially. Yeah.
Yeah. Emotional and financial balance. Yeah. I love it. So we've got just a couple of minutes. We had another question that I'd like to get through it. This one says, mindfulness is a growing practice with children and youth. Unfortunately, our education system isn't teaching them anything about being an entrepreneur or running a business. Does your book provide guidance that I would use with my own son and daughter? And this is from Gary in Minnesota.
I'm not sure what to answer on that one, because is he meaning the practical, is Gary meaning the practical side of money, or like setting the budget, or like the psychological side of money and the mindfulness part? I guess it's the mindfulness part, right?
Yeah, I think, yeah, because he's talking about mindfulness. It says mindfulness is a growing practice with children and youth, but unfortunately he believes that our education system is not specifically teaching them anything about being an entrepreneur or actually running a business. So I think this goes to the point that I brought up earlier, where I think, you know, they're being taught on how to go fill out an application and get a job, but not what to do with that money or anything beyond that, or choosing to be an entrepreneur, which allows them a lot more freedom to grow to whatever level they would like.
Yeah. This book is based on the seven pillars of mindfulness. And in my book, Mindfulness, is also explained how I've translated the seven pillars into financial topics. So you can use that, that's for sure. And I added a small chapter as an appendix also for entrepreneurs. And that's also basically because I've been helping in my entire life as an entrepreneur and as a... as an employee, I've been helping entrepreneurs how to manage their money properly in the best way they can. So yes, I do have a link to entrepreneurs. It's a personal one. But you can also use it to find out which, if you are an employee, you can only make X amount, because and you can ask for a raise and that's about it. Mm-hmm. But if you are an entrepreneur, you can use other leverages. You can sell more things for in less time, or just by selling things. If you are self-employed, there's something somewhere between really an entrepreneur with people that you employ and being an employee. But you can ask more as a self-employed. More than an employee as a self-employed. But there's also a limited amount of money that you can make, more or less. And if you are an investor, then there is no link between the hours you spend and the money you make. So that's also something which is in my book. Is it for an entrepreneur? Yeah, it's the way of looking and making an income. Let me put it like that. And it's not really a book how to become an entrepreneur. I advise everybody to become an entrepreneur, but it's not fit. Not everybody is fit to become an entrepreneur.
I get it.
That's in their personality.
Mm-hmm. Well, Michael, thank you so much for coming on and also for putting this book out. And can I assume the people can get the book anywhere where books are sold? They can get it at Amazon, Barnes & Noble.
Yep.
It's everywhere. And And if they want to reach you in regards to the coaching part, is there a website that you would have them go to?
Yeah, just moneyfulness.com, and you will find it from there. That's it's automatically there. You can link it. You can send me an email. So if that's quite easy to find.
All right. Well, thank you again for writing the book and for your time and coming on.
Thanks for having me, Alan, and have a nice day.
Thank you. You too. And for everybody out there, join us next Monday when we are going to be joined by the winningest coach in the history of Cleveland State University, Coach Gary Waters. And in our interview, he will discuss his new book, The 10 Principles of a Character Coach, which addresses many of the issues that young men and women are experiencing in the athletic arena today. Coach Waters believes that character and values need to be a high priority in those individuals tasked with guiding young people as well as themselves. And for everybody out there, please visit our archives of past interviews at answers.network. You can also subscribe to the show through iTunes, through iHeartRadio, Spotify, SoundCloud, Stitcher, YouTube, Spreaker, BeChu, HugeTube, and many other popular podcasts. If you listen to a podcast that I didn't mention, contact them, tell them that you want answers.network as part of theirs as well, or contact us and we will contact them and get on there as well. And remember, the next time you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page, check out some of our latest shows. If you like them, please like us and spread the word. For everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us again next week on Answers Network.
Hello, I'm Marty Cove. You might remember me from roles such as Sensei in the Karate Kid films. I've done over 100 films and countless stunts in my career, and I've always given 100%. With the damage done to my body over time, I needed to find relief from my chronic pain. My passion for health and fitness drove me to find a natural way to combat muscle pain. Teaming up with doctors, detectives, and a compounding pharmacist, we've created Marty's Cobra Cove Ultra Strength CBD Cream. It's the only thing that has been strong enough to knock out my pain, and fast. Honestly, you may have tried the rest, but it's time to try the best. It's legal, it's safe, and 100% effective. Show your pain no mercy. Go to www.martyscobracove.com.
You're listening to Answers Network with Alan Cardoza, only on LA Talk Radio.